Hi, you've tuned in to the Lovely Travels podcast, where we talk about all things travel and adventure. My name is Emma Lovell, also known as Lovely, and I have a mission to visit every UN-recognised country in the world while raising awareness for mental health. Join me as we revisit some of my past adventures, speak to fellow travellers and interesting locals, all while following the journey to 195 countries. I'll be joined soon by my co-pilot, Darius, in Germany. And sometimes we're even going to hit the road together. Make sure to join in the adventure by following me on Instagram, Lovely Travels. You can also join our Facebook group, Lovely Travels Community, and learn more about us at the website, lovelytravels.com. But for now, it's listening time. Travel vicariously along with us.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Lovely Travels podcast. It's your favorite introductory guy, Darius, welcoming Danielle and Emma, as this poncho clad duo, talk about Peru and all the exciting Peruvian stuff that they did when they visited. I made a list of things that they talked about. So brace yourselves for beanie FOMO and 18-course degustation menus, pisco sours, of course, eating guinea pigs, mismatched gumboots, capybaras, enchiladas, Machu Picchu, mystery meats, altitude sickness, and, of course, everyone's favorite, snacks. So any of those things sound appealing, I think you're in the right place and you're going to have a great time. Thank you, Danielle, for being on the show, and take it away, ladies.
Welcome back to the Lovely Travels podcast, Danielle.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
You're officially our most recurring guest, so congratulations.
I think in the industry we call that repeat visitation.
Yes. So you jumped on very early with us in episode 7, which was just talking about being a travel blogger and your life as with your adventures of Poss and Ruby. And then you also joined us to talk about packing tips on episode 39.
Yeah, it was great to chat about those things and, you know, our passion for travel that we both share, of course, Emma, and my passion for packing, which you and I have a little bit of a different view of that, but we work together on it.
We do. I think it was Tess had a really good packing tip on the Poland episode, and I was like, you should have been on that episode. Danielle's going to love it, so you have to jump tune in back on that one. But today is, though we've talked about a lot of countries, today is your first country episode with us, and we will be talking about beautiful Peru in South America.
Yay! I'm so excited about this one. It's such a beautiful place.
And you are wearing a poncho?
I am. I am wearing a poncho, an alpaca poncho purchased in Cusco.
Oh, and you had a beanie on before as well, which I think is yes, if you go to Peru and you don't buy one of the beanies, you're like, have you even been to Peru?
Yeah, exactly. It's got the little ear pocket that go over your little ears and the little pom-pom at the top. They're super cute.
It's kind of a necessity. Like even if you take a beanie, you end up getting quite cold, and so everybody just ends up having this kind of costume because you do need to wear the warmer things. And just the colors, they're so beautiful, aren't they? You can't walk past it.
No, and the handiwork is just amazing, and you get a bit of FOMO because you see everyone walking around looking so fabulous, and you've got, you know, your Kathmandu beanie or the beanie that your grandma knitted, but there's all these beautiful pieces going around, so you have to get one.
Yes. And so we're both going to, I'll share a selfie of each of us, but I was going to wear my poncho, but that's from Mexico. I wore it in Peru, but I'm actually wearing my Black Dog Institute hoodie, which was the reason I went to Peru. I went to trek Machu Picchu and raise funds for Black Dog Institute, who contributing to a mentally healthier world, raising awareness about depression and anxiety and education and training. So we raised more than $60,000 and did a trek. There were 13 of us. And so, yeah, I have many, many photos of me in this bright orange hoodie, and that was given to me in 2012. When I went, and I'm still, it's now 2021, and I still wear it and I still love it, and I will wear it to death. So we've both got our Peruvian costuming on. But tell me, when did you go?
Good question, actually. I am pretty sure it was almost the same as you. It was 2013, I think it was. I was in Peru.
So. And why did you go to Peru?
I went to Peru because I've always wanted to go to South America. But it was my partner at the time, his family lived in Uruguay. So we were on our way to surprise his mum for her 70th birthday, and I didn't want to go to South America without doing some travel as well. So we stopped in Peru for 12 days, and we joined up with an Intrepid tour for awesome. The 12 days, which was amazing.
Yeah, it's a good way because it's quite, very foreign language. I mean, your partner would have spoken Spanish and hablas español.
Un poquito.
Yeah. So, but it helps a lot. So to be able to get around, and so having those guides and it's such a, rugged sort of country. Like there's, these mountainous areas, you really, to be able to go and see that real beauty of the nature and just that magnitude of it, you kind of do need some help. There is the very typical route, which would probably be similar to what I did, like Lima, Cusco, and then getting the train. We went and trekked, but there is also the train that can go from Cusco to Machu Picchu. So they're sort of, I think, the main touch points that people are going. And then the other place that people would be heading to, which I don't know, did you go there, was the is like the Galapagos sort of area or the...
No, we didn't do the Galapagos, but we did the Amazon rainforest, which was amazing. That's
the other element people go to see, that the wildlife side of. Mm-hmm. So it's such a draw card, Peru. And Peru, in terms of South America, it's probably one of the most visited. Like, I think the more well-known, you've got Argentina, Brazil, Peru. I'd say they would be the top up there. Like, people do go to Chile and Bolivia, but I think they're sort of, they tend to be a little more challenging to get through, whereas Peru's, I think their tourism marketing and their setup is very good.
Yeah, and I think with, one of the biggest draw cards being Machu Picchu, it's a bit of a bucket list item that people are going there specifically for, so they then tend to do a little bit more travel around that.
Yeah, so you just were in Peru and Uruguay in South America.
And Argentina as well. Oh. A little family trip into Argentina, which was gorgeous. I could have stayed there. I loved it.
And flying there from Australia, did you fly to Argentina first and then?
No. So flew to Santiago, Chile as the stopover, and then went up to Lima, arrived in Lima, and then had a couple of nights. It was actually my birthday.
Ah.
A couple of nights in Lima before we joined the tour, which was really cool. So, we'll talk about it, I'm sure, a little bit later on. But being my birthday, of course, I always like to do something a little bit special. So we went to one of the famous restaurants called Astre y Gaston, and an 18-course degustation menu followed.
Oh, my goodness.
Matched wines.
Oh, my gosh. How long were you there?
A long time.
Oh, jeez. I feel like, give me a break.
We were there for hours, but lots of little courses, big courses, lots of little courses. And the staff were amazing, and they celebrated my birthday with me. And, of course, the token sparkler or candle comes out in the dessert for your birthday, and they took me into the kitchen, and I've got these photos of me and the chefs. And then, of course, on the way home, we thought it would be a great idea to stop into a bar after we've had a minimum of 18 wines, because every course was matched with wine, and got stuck into the Pisco Sour.
Yes, which is the sort of welcome drink of Peru. And it's quite funny, I actually didn't have mine for a while, because I have this rule when I do my treks, I try not to drink before I go. And typically when I'm on the tour, I won't have a drink till the end, because it's just like going to do this massive physical. We did 4 days of trekking, and so I was like, I need to be game ready. But they're like, it's like a custom. And I was like, I know, I really wanted to. Like, I love doing that stuff. And then it was funny, after the trek, I was like, the first drink I had, I don't know why, it was like a Jim Beam and Coke. Like, I just was like, I need hard. Yeah. And then I was like, I'm on the table, like altitude and some Jim Beam. But I did get the Pisco Sour in the end. and thoroughly. Actually, my friend, we pet sat for her in Sydney, and her husband is Peruvian. And so they, when they came back, they brought us some Pisco Sour mix as a gift.
Yeah, I think, what do they say, 1, 2, 3 floor?
Yes. Because it's so strong. Sweet and delicious.
Yes, so, and they creep up on you.
Mm-hmm. And I think really the altitude does add to it as well. Mm-hmm. Once you get to Cusco. So, yeah, so we'll start in Lima. Tell me a little bit about what you got to do and see while you were there.
Yeah, so in Lima, obviously the dinner was kind of the highlight on our sort of arrival. And then we did sort of a half day tour. So we visited the ruins and, of course, the town square, which in most of those South American towns is kind of the key area. We did visit, and I'm pretty sure it was the state library or the original library, which was amazing. It had like all these beautiful staircases and wooden staircases and floor to ceiling bookshelves, and it was quite a unique little spot that I don't know that many people get to see. It wasn't sort of open, I guess. It felt like it was a little bit dusty and closed off, but it was just quite spectacular, and sort of explored the laneways and went to the local sort of marketplace. And that was kind of about it in Lima, sort of that traditional half day city tour.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is what we did as well. Flew in, mm-hmm. I think afternoon time, and we came in from via Auckland. So it was Auckland and then into Lima. Straight.
Most of those flights go to Santiago and then straight.
Yeah, it was long.
It's long.
And on the way back, I went via Buenos Aires and then Auckland and then back. So yeah, they're not cheap. Getting from Australia to South America is not cheap, and it's not direct, and it's not fast. So you're strapping in, and that's why you tend to try and do a few things while you're over there and make the most of it. We went around, you know, El Centro, like the centros, that main place, the square, and generally there's like a history lesson there, and a lot of key events happen there. So if you've sort of seen that, and then I just really remember as well, like they had these kind of avenues or like cobbled streets that led to the centro, and down those, yeah, I just had, I think being the first day there, seeing those like little shops with all those little handicrafts and the leather, they had like shot glasses in leather little pouches and just all the intricate designs, and just, you know, trying to hold back because you go, I want all of it. I want to, you know, you're like, you know, they're like, yeah, yeah, you're going to see like the real stuff. Like this is, you know, obviously the hub, but you get all the bright colors just straight away, and having a nice, having a meal. I think tempted some of us to have the guinea pig, which is not called guinea pig, but it's what we would call a guinea pig. Tempted that first night, but I don't think we did. We sort of saved it for a future. And then just, I think a little modest kind of hotel we stayed in, and quite exhausted after the day, and knew we had to get our trip. So I didn't see much of Lima. I think from all accounts, I think a lot of people do tend to just, unless, you know, I know my friend spends a lot more time there because her husband's family's there. So it's you're more there for the city and then a base to get to other parts.
Yeah, that's right. There is a coastal sort of walk area there. There's a big shopping centre, restaurants, cafes sort of built into the cliffside that looks out over the ocean, which is quite beautiful. And then it sort of walks up and there's sort of sculpture gardens and things like that. So that's a nice way to sort of ease yourself into it, especially after such a long flight from Australia.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And if you haven't seen much of that, just marvelling at the architecture, and it does really follow that, you get that Spanish sort of European-y vibe of, everything sort of coming around that central area and the big columns and that sort of thing. So you get that real old world feeling. Yeah. It is a nice introduction. And so then you went as well. Did you fly then to Cusco from there?
No, flew from there to Puerto Maldonado on the Amazon River there. So we flew into there in this teeny tiny little plane. It was bucketing rain. And as soon as we got off the plane, we went into a tin shed kind of airport, certainly nothing luxurious there, and loaded all of our bags onto the top of a van that then took us to the river, and then we boarded a boat and took the boat, like a little sort of, I think in Thailand they call them bum boats, but just a little sort of long canoe type scenario with a motor on the back, and went down the river to the Eco Lodge where we stayed for a couple of nights.
Oh, the Eco Lodge sounds fantastic. So what was that? Was it quite basic or...?
It was quite basic, but it was fantastic. We had our own little cabin, and on the front of the cabin were hammocks, so you could spend the afternoon just chilling out, laying in the hammock. Very basic little bathroom. The bed was covered in a mosquito net because obviously there's lots of bugs and mosquitoes in the Amazon.
Yeah.
And had like a central sort of communal area where the meals were served and where people could hang out. And there was lots of like books about animals and things, research stuff that people could do, and just a really nice open air space. And all around there were the most beautiful birds. There were the macaws, and there was a toucan, and that was something that had been on my list that I really wanted to see a toucan in real life. So that was pretty cool. But it was real torrential rain while we were there, like really bucketing down. So on the day that we arrived, we were given gumboots. I had two of the same feet. They just didn't have enough. So it was hilarious. But we went into the rainforest. So there was about 12 of us in the tour group. So we went through into the rainforest, and the guide was really interesting, talking about some of the traditional medicines and some of the different things that the local people, the indigenous people, used throughout their life in the Amazon, and talked about different plants and the fungi, and it was fascinating. It was like a David Attenborough tour.
Yeah. Sounds phenomenal. And maybe like the rain kind of added to the rainforest feel, although quite wet, I'm sure. Yeah,
extremely wet. So the next day we were supposed to do a hike, but there was no way. Well, I was willing to continue to do the hike in the rain because I'll sign up for anything.
Yeah.
But they had a vote within the group, and, of course, the majority of the group didn't want to hike in the rain. So we ended up doing an alternate activity, which was we took a cruise on the boat and went spotting sort of wildlife along the sides of the river. I was desperate to see an anaconda, but that didn't come across our path. But we saw amazing monkeys and birds, but the rain was just torrential. Like, really, there was not a lot of wildlife that was out. We saw the capybara, which is kind of like a giant rat kind of mix of it, a bit of everything. So we saw a few things, but certainly not everything that we would have seen. But we had the most amazing lunch on the boat. They had pre-prepared these amazing little parcels that were still hot by lunchtime. Like, we'd been on the boat for probably 2 or 3 hours maybe, and then they wheeled out this lunch that we had as the rain pelted down around us. And it was like a banana leaf. Stuff with almost like a enchilada type thing, and it was rice and beans, and it was so delicious. And I was just amazed that they could create this beautiful lunch on the boat in the pouring rain, and it was still warm. And they had literally just wrapped them all like in foil. They hadn't done anything, you know, they didn't have any magical equipment, but it was such a unique and beautiful experience. It was so good.
Yeah.
And then they had cake for everyone afterwards.
So. it is incredible, isn't it, when you're in these really remote areas and the way that they can prepare food and, having that, figuring it out and, you know, yeah, like you say, it's that real local experience. That's so lovely.
Yeah.
And so from there, where did you go next after the Amazon?
From there, we flew to Cuzco.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure we did. And we visited a few of the surrounding towns. We went to a place called Ollantaytambo, which has a lot of ruins there. And then we caught the we went to Cusco, and then we caught the train up to
Machu Picchu.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty special experience. And it's quite, I was just going to say before as well, when you were saying with the mosquitoes, like something to note about Peru, it's in terms of vaccinations, it's a country where you have to carry your yellow fever card. And so it is somewhere that you really must be vaccinated for. Well, if coming back to Australia, if you haven't got it, there will be an issue. And we actually had people in Cusco, because they hadn't got them in Australia, they were told they had to. We had to get nurses to come to the hotel and actually give them the vaccination there so that they could be able to go home. And it had to be done within a certain time.
Yeah, I don't recall that, but I am vaccinated to the hilt.
So you have to have your little vaccination passport and you know, for your own health too, because these things are still present. In South America is one place where, yeah, that really is, that's a risk. So, but then what I was going to say about the train as well is that, and the interesting thing about Machu Picchu is there's very limited, there's like caps on how many people can be there. They really protect it. And so it is something you kind of, it is worth going sometimes with a tour company, because booking that, trying to get those tickets, like, it's quite complicated. It might be a little bit better now. I mean, we did this, you know, 8-9 years ago, and I talked about it on the Bolivia episode too. It's like the internet might have made things easier, but there's sort of a certain local knowledge that it's needed to understand the permits and the requirements. And it was very strict to the packet. I don't know if you remember as well, like how much luggage you could take on the train as well. So they were really like, very strict. These are the numbers. These are the tickets you have to have even to go and do the at Machu Picchu. There's Huayna Picchu, which is the extra bit. So which gate you entered through and which parts you were at and how long you were there for, they were really very strict about it.
Yeah, and I believe those numbers have only gotten stricter because of environmental impact and, you know, over tourism and the numbers of visitors on the site. So I think they've actually reduced a lot of those numbers. So it is really important that you've booked ahead.
You can't turn up and be like, I think I'll go today. I do know someone though who did just rock, like, she must have booked her ticket, but she did just decide to do the Inca Trail and did the Inca Trail in barefoot, thongs, sorry, flip flops. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which would not recommend. I have not done the Inca Trail. It's funny, there's been a few places I've been where I've done been to the famous place or been through a similar famous experience but not done the typical one, and which is lovely and it's a great way, but then it's also you kind of want to do the typical thing too. So I actually did the Laris Valley trek. So we spent 4 days trekking in the Laris Valley. We didn't trek the whole way. There were times where the van would take us to the next campsite or connect us up. There were a few times where there was an optional extra, you know, and like you, I was like, yep, hands up. I'll do the extra bit. So to keep going trekking to the camp or to be driven. And then we actually ended our trek in Ollantaytambo and got the train that last bit. Whereas, when you do the Inca Trail, you do actually walk into, I believe it's the Sun Gate at Machu Picchu. So, and so the difference as well was we got the little bus up to Machu Picchu the day that we went to visit. And to me, it wasn't, I actually quite enjoyed the way we did it because we got in the night before. And so we've done a big trek, so we're pretty wrecked. So to have that night and then to have a day and be fresh and just that have it a whole the whole day just focused on Machu Picchu
bus ride up is quite interesting. I would say if anyone gets motion sickness, take your medication beforehand. Touch wood, I don't, but those switchbacks, and I am sure that those drivers have like a time trial that they try and beat each time because they hammer it up and down there and it's very steep.
Yes, and the queue, like I just remember the queue, even though you've got tickets, you've got permits, but it's just, you know, it's like a well-oiled machine and you wait in the queue and then you get on the bus and, yeah, you're really crammed in. I do remember that being like sort of up against my buddy and on the window and, yeah, leaning in and going around these, you know, you're in the Andes in these wicked mountain passes, like going, where's this famous Machu Picchu thing? And No wonder they didn't find it. It's like it's, you know, it's really
very well hidden.
Yeah, it was. It was really in there. And for me, the special thing, and I have a photo, I'll have to share it when we release this one. I have a photo with me with Machu Picchu behind. It makes me teary thinking about it. I have tears in my eyes, like, because, and I've had it with a few of these wonders of the world and these, like, things that you've just seen photos of over and over and over again. And you do sort of feel like when you see it, will it really, like, live up to the expectation? And it is, like, cannot believe how much it's like the picture. And we were very fortunate, had a lovely clear day. It is exactly like the picture. The pictures that you've seen on all the brochures, like that angle, that front-on view, it is, I could not believe how much it was like it, and I couldn't believe how much I felt when I stood in front of that view. Like, it was just, this is it. Like, this is real and this is a special place to be.
Yeah, it's a goosebump moment kind of thing. Like when we arrived extremely early and it was very foggy and I was devastated. I thought, oh, my goodness, this is just not how it's supposed to be. And this isn't what the pictures look like. And it was almost like a movie. We arrived and our little group sort of walked in through the gates and you walk sort of down and around to see that sweeping view. And almost as we turned the corner, the fog lifted and the sun began to shine through and it was just breathtaking. It was almost like it had that, oh, moment, you know. But, yeah, it's beautiful. And it's so nice to explore and just wander around a little bit without a guided element. Like, I think it's really important to do a guided element because there's so much history and so many things to learn and understand, but also to just wander around and sort of take in the enormity of it all is really nice to do on your own as well.
And it is hard to take in all of it too. So you're getting a little bit, and our guide kind of kept sharing in case people wanted to, but I was the same. I heard a little bit and then, you know, I think they're getting into some of the finer, like this part's here and this symbol means this, and yeah, just wanted to be there. And I actually really enjoyed watching the alpacas, like you're up on this crazy mountain rock formation type thing and there's just these alpacas just grazing, just like, what? Oh, you guys just discovered this? Like, we've been here for ages. Like, it's my house. just add to that perfect feeling of, yes, we are definitely in Peru, in this place. And did you do any of the other part? Like, did you do the Huayna Picchu or?
No, I would love to do that part of it. And I had spoken to friends beforehand and they had talked about, you know, you need to book in and things like that. But being part of the group, it just wasn't really on the table. And I find it quite challenging sometimes in those group scenarios when you are a bit of a traveler and you know the things that you really want to do, you feel like you're constantly trying to corrupt the itinerary and you don't want to be that person. So I kind of I put that on the list for next time.
Yeah, good one. It's for me, it was like after doing 4 days of trekking, we were going up to like 4,000 meters, over 4,200 meters at the highest point, you know, up and down this epic trek through the Andes. But then the Huayna Picchu, because of the speed we had to do it, because Machu Picchu is actually not as high, anywhere near as high. It's not even as high as Cusco. I'll have to fact check. I think it's around 2,700 or something like that. Still pretty bloody high. It's in the mountain. Yeah. But going up Huayna Picchu, it's just like you ascend so quickly. And so that's brutal. You're already at altitude and you're on the top and it's like, it's the pointy bit when you're looking at Machu Picchu, it's the big pointy rock behind it. You're literally on top of it. So then to look down over it was incredible. But then it's like, okay, cool. Take your photos. Haha. Now get down.
and the path, I believe, is quite.
Oh yeah. It's like a staircase. Like, yeah. It's just like a winding staircase up the side of this like epic thing and a rocky, it's not a staircase, it's, you know, built in the stone and coming down there's like almost bits where it's like a ladder and so you're really like clambering down and there's like ropes to hold on, like you are, there is actual ladders but you kind of got to hold on and for some people that was harder and it's harder on the knees going down, so for some people that was harder, like really, and doing it again at pace, you're trying to. But we had a very, very funny moment at the top and extra special now because my friend, sadly, one of the people I trekked with in my group, he passed away 3 months later. So he was 24 and he passed away of a heart attack. So it was pretty upsetting. And you know what it's like when you've been on one of those group trips, you bond really quickly. We spent 12 days together and I hadn't known him very long, but we were going to be friends for a lifetime. And we had this little group that we really connected with, but his name was Rory, and Rory and one of the other guys, Matt, had this photo bombing thing that they had sort of done together. They just kept bombing each other's photos, so it became a little thing. And so, actually, on top of Wine of Pichu, it was incredible. Rory actually got the winning shot. He managed to photo bomb Matt with, and it was like one of those like. They must have it in Peru as well, the like Lucha Libre masks. They had all these masks for sale around at the shops. So he bought one of those, waited for this prime moment. Matt's having his photo like, here I am on top of Wine and Pichu at this famous place, and Rory got in the back of the photo with this mask on, and he turned around and was just like, ah, you got me! And these poor other people who were up on the top of this thing would just been going like, what? And then another thing we did on top of it, because, you know, as I said, we had a time limit, so I don't know how we managed to get all these things in, but you're like, I'm on top of a mountain, I'm going to do crazy stuff. Nick, who was actually on our Bhutan episode, so he and I trekked in Peru and in Bhutan, he told the story on there, but he wanted to have a photo in a suit, so he got changed, like quick deck change into a suit. Again, these poor people must have been watching. And then I was sitting there. And so then these people watching kind of thought that he was getting ready to like propose or something. And so I didn't remember this bit, but he told me and he's like, yeah, they thought that he was, you know, going to do this thing. And then he just got up and had his like kind of, I got out the way and he had a photo and they were like, oh. Which is, I was all very, like, I was very puzzled. Like, why are these people dressing up and doing these things? And it was like, okay, everyone, down, 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 down. It was a very adventurous day. But
The altitude got to everyone.
Yeah, we made it memorable, but just such a magical place, and to see it from those two views, I felt very, very fortunate. And going back down after Machu Picchu town is such a really lovely place to be with that river running. And you've got the cobbled stone streets and you've got all your little tiny little hotels and little shops. And we also went to, there was a pools, they had the warm natural.
Yes. There's some springs there.
Natural springs. Yeah. So I remember going up through the town and it was a bit, you know, it adds to it. It is misty. It's kind of rainy. It's got that real magical feeling. And then to go up and sit in these warm springs, near the river, just, yeah. And after just having such a big day, and I think it's emotional. We went in after our lunch, just sat by this, we could have explored the town more, but we just sat on this balcony at this restaurant by the river and just being in the town.
Yeah, it has that. I think it kind of has that vibe and that impact on people, because the day before we went up to Machu Picchu, we did the same thing. You explore the little town and found ourselves at a local soccer match. And so bought the snacks, because I'm always about the learning the new snacks and what people have. So at the soccer you have popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
So popcorn was part of the snacks. You could have like a meat on a stick, like a
street meat.
It looked kind of like salami of some description. And you could have, they're almost like a pastry sort of horn that's stuffed with dulce de leche, which is the caramel sauce, caramel paste, and sat and watched this local soccer match. Everyone, it was like we just became part of the community, like we were talking to people sitting next to us, and these little kids just became like our best friends, were sitting on our knees and talking and laughing and started cheering and barracking for one of the teams. And it was just such a lovely moment in a town just to feel and do what local people do.
Yeah, Yeah, well, that's lovely. And the popcorn, I think, was something like that was in the bars as well. They really love popcorn.
Yeah.
You just go.
I love popcorn, so I was quite happy with that.
Yeah, like they'd have snacks in the bars. I do remember that as well. So so after Machu Picchu, did you got the train back to Cusco again?
Train back to Cusco, yeah, and had, I think, another couple of nights. We had some amazing adventures in Cusco. It was a particular festival. I'm not sure. It would have been around Easter, in the lead up to Easter, so there was a lot of religious festivals on, and there was some spectacular parades going through the town and some beautiful things, like the churches were all decorated. And so it was just really interesting to explore the town and walk around and see the performances. And yeah, it's a beautiful place.
Well, and it is like Cusco is just like a postcard, isn't it? It is so picture perfect in terms of like the, when we were there, like blue sky, white clouds just dotted on. It didn't seem to move. And then just, you know, it's a mountainous sort of area. And then the buildings, I don't know, they have that old sort of stone architecture type thing. You had your centro, your main square area. And it was so, apart from the altitude, it was walking around is very tiring. But it was very easy to sort of navigate around the streets and, yeah, but I remember, yeah, walking up the stairs even in the hotel and walking up the street to get back to a hotel, like, and some of the people, we were there to trek and they were like, but I've done all this training and I'm so fit. And it's like, that's altitude. Like, it's 3,200 metres. That's what the city sits at, you know. It's, and you fly straight into that. So a lot of people, you know, it's just to be aware that you might get hit by the altitude sickness, and the only way to deal with it is to get lower. And my friend actually got hit really bad with it and ended up having to go to Machu Picchu sooner, and she went to Pisac as well because they're lower. So
yeah. I was really surprised with how quickly it can hit people, because we saw that at the airport, you know, people were dropping like flies. And I have a bit of a cast iron constitution. I don't seem to get sick. I don't seem to get seasickness. I don't seem to get altitude sickness. I seem to just kind of be able to go along. But we were seeing people like in wheelchairs, at literally who had been on our flight and had were at the luggage carousel being put into wheelchairs. And I was thinking, what is happening? Like, this is just crazy. But the altitude sickness does hit people quite hard, and yeah, it can be quite debilitating.
It really is, like the color drains from them, and like they just, body goes weak, the headache, it's like it's just feels like your brain's, you know, sort of like being, which basically is what happening, your brain's swelling. It's super nice. So you feel like your head's being squished. I got it on like the second day. I'd already experienced it in Tanzania and on Mount Kilimanjaro, so I kind of knew what to expect. But it was, yeah, just interesting that it hit me. It did both times actually hit me like a few days in. And so it is that it's acclimatizing. And that's why with our trip, we were in Cusco and then we spent a few days. We went to Pisac and visited the Sacred Valley. And so we were just doing some, learning about the history. Like amazing in Pisac, they had the like stepped farming type thing. So it's just like this valley and it's just like built-in stairs or like levels into, and it was so perfect as well. These just lines basically on the mountains and then a river going through this just valley that stretched for kilometres. It's so picturesque.
It's very rugged scenery, but very beautiful, very picturesque. And there is a lot of farming that goes on throughout Peru, and obviously that's some of their key industries. So, you know, they have thousands of different kinds of corn and thousands of different types of potatoes, and farming is probably one of their key industries. But it's really interesting to see the different methods of farming.
Yeah. And we went, we sort of had our like sightseeing days, we went to this place. I don't know if you went there too, but it's like a stone slide. It's really probably not very safe, but they've sort of, it's like there's just this stone, it's natural but they kind of, over time people have slid down it. It's like kind of carved in this slide into the hilly, mountainy, and yeah, I've got photos of me sliding down this stone, wall thing, and it wasn't overly comfortable, and I'm probably not overly safe, especially before we were about to do a trek. But you know,
When in Rome,
I'll do as everyone else is doing. And the food was really good. On our tour, we had probably more, like some of the stuff was a bit more westernized, but on our trek, I mean. But like you said before, incredible that they would. We had horses carrying up our gear and carrying up all the cooking stuff, and then this crew of six people, and they were just so beautiful, and they would make the food for us, and we'd often have popcorn as a snack in the afternoon and hot teas and coffees. And while we would, it's more glamping, we would have our tents and do our trekking, and they would come in the morning and say, would you like a tea or a coffee, and bring you a little bowl of warm water to wash your hands. And at one place, I think it was our first night of camping, woke up in the morning and these women were there, Quechuan women. So Quechuan is the local indigenous population around that region. And they've set up like a little market, and that's where I got my beanie. I just could not buy. So I got I don't have it anymore, but it was sort of a beigey tan color with white pattern, and it had alpacas around it because you have to. And then matching, I had the gloves. They do the gloves, the fingerless gloves. Then you fold it over and then you have mittens with a little button on it. It's like, oh, genius. But yeah, these women just had set up this little market with all these beautiful handicrafts, and it was like shopping in our pajamas just in the morning before we went off to trek. And it just, having that culture come to us. And obviously, yeah, that, you know, they understand that they will make money from the tourists, but you know, those things were all made by those local women. And we didn't see any other foreigners while we were on our trek, so that's the beauty of the Laras Valley, as opposed to the doing the Inca Trail, which is quite a popular and common trek now in the world. And we would see very, very few local people. We would just see like this one Quechuan woman walking through the mountains and walk past.
And did she have her skirts and her fedora hat? Yeah, those little hats.
Like out in the middle of the mountains and just wearing this epic outfit. And
I'll have to share with you. I've got some photos of that. This woman, you know, almost herding the sheep in this amazing skirt and apron and hat and jumpers. She looks so stylish. But yep. So warm, but
yes.
Middle of nowhere.
Lots of layers, lots of layers. So this, you know, mountain scene and eagles flying, and then this just woman walking, you know, alpacas a lot, like, you know, coming along, and then going over the crest of a mountain and this lake. I just remember this lake was there. Like, you're like, how is there a lake? Of course it's, but you just didn't expect it. I love that element of trekking. You don't know what to expect. You don't know what's coming. You turn a corner or go over a hill, and the sun was just touching this lake, and it was just like a mirror. So it was, felt so close to nature and so, blessed to be there. And we had wonderful local Peruvian guides, so getting to speak to them and hear about their lives. It was, for me, a lovely way to get to experience that country and to have a bit of time in Cusco, to do the Machu Picchu. The train is fantastic. And we, finishing in Ollantaytambo, the sun temple there, that's the big temple there, you know, just getting that sort of Incan history and getting that vibe, you're just like, oh, there's just so much life.
Yes. That
happened. And it's, you know, really a whole world, like a whole different world to what is here now. And it was almost hidden. And it's lovely to learn about it, but also so important to protect it.
Yeah, we found that a lot of the traditional activities and farming ways and methods and stories and religious activities and everything are still really well preserved, and they were demonstrating that through the visitor experiences that we were having. A woman made chocolate from scratch, which was interesting, but fascinating to learn the process.
You go to the Chocolate Museum in Cusco? I think that's quite a famous draw card.
This was as part of our trip. We were in this little village in the middle of nowhere. It wasn't really even a village. It was just a couple of houses scattered around. But we went into this woman's home. She cooked us this amazing lunch with those giant corn kernels.
Mm. Yes.
And
the meals.
Yeah, and then she demonstrated, the making of the chocolate, and it's almost like using the meat mincer that we all probably know of as a kid, when your mum used to make shepherd's pie, putting meat through the mincer, putting the cacao through the mincer and grounding it down and making this, sort of sugar-free chocolate. And,
I'm sure it was a bit bitter.
It was a little bit bitter. It was a bit grainy. Certainly wasn't Cadbury's, but look, it was lovely to see that those traditions are being kept alive. And the chicha, did you have the chicha, the traditionally brewed local beer?
Probably.
Yeah,
you would have. Not standing out.
But it was very rustic, again, in that same sort of village. We went just to this random, all the chickens were running around.
Yeah.
And a big jug was just scooped out of a 44-gallon drum and everyone kind of got to have a taste. And I'd describe it as watery, kind of a bit hoppy, dishwashing liquidy.
You're really selling it.
Amazingly tasty, but worth trying.
Experience. Yeah. And that's what we're there for. And well, on food, I talked to you a little bit about it on the Bolivian episode too, but I think there is sort of, there are the more authentic restaurants and they've got this real nice kind of cosmopolitan, fusion-y type thing going on as well, where they're sort of taking the local and the traditional elements but sort of, modernising it or, fine dining, turning it into a bit more fine dining. So there's that element. But then I did find that some of the places we went, once you'd seen the menu, you had seen the menu at all of the restaurants. There was sort of this meat and veg and
alpaca.
Yeah, alpaca, chips and veg. Meat, chips and veg. Yep. Lobo, which is the beef dish with the rice and the, capsicum and beef and then potato, the fries and then an egg on top. Very hearty. But, just you sort of go, these are the options. They're like, I'll try this today. And then, when you're having lunch, dinner out, you go, I think I've tried a lot of this. I guess it's alpaca today.
The guinea pig, definitely. You have to try it. It's depending on where you eat it, it comes presented very differently. But in the restaurant where we tried it, it came presented as the entire roasted guinea pig on a stand, which was quite confronting.
Yeah, I chose not to, partake in that one. Yeah. Mine was in one of those more gourmet, finesse to it. And they, mine came sort of
fillet of
butterflied. Butterflied and crusted with stuff. And so it had so much stuff on it that I, it was generic meat taste, but not something that I would go, I must have that all the time. I did really enjoy.
Yeah, I did too. I thought that was quite a nice meat. Lots of corn, the elote, really good, and a good street snack as well. Mm. Lots of enchiladas on the street. I remember people looking at me sideways going, "Do you eat off the street?" And I'm like, yes, I do, because most of the time this is where the good stuff is. You just need to do it smart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice going in and, finding your own way and having, I know we had a few days where we got to go and find lunch ourselves and just, trying to decipher the menu. And I always say with South America and Central America and even Mexico, the Latin countries, sometimes there's a spin on the Western thing. So you're like, I have a salad and it comes out and you're like, not what I was expecting. But okay, so you're just going to kind of take, when you read things on the menu, I think sometimes just take, especially if it's a Western thing that you know, take it with a grain of salt, because it might come out a little bit differently. So
yeah, and there's a traditional green soup, and when I say green, it's electric green. But it's a chicken and cilantro soup, coriander soup, and it's delicious, but it's shocking when it comes out. It's so electric green, but it is really delicious, and it's a traditional one. And I recommend people go to the local markets and the food section. I remember having fresh, I love fresh pineapple. I love pineapple. Emma knows this, but freshly squeezed pineapple juice for, I don't know, like 50 cents. And you sit there at the little bar there and drink your pineapple juice, and absolutely delicious. Like, I think I could probably almost say one of the best pineapple juices I've had around the world, because
that's a big call.
It was delicious. And all the different things that were there, you know, all the different potatoes and all the different corns, and you know, they have the black corn and the white corn and the traditional yellow corn and all of that kind of thing. And then there was this incredible pressed sort of meat scenario, which was pig's ears and quarters, all just pressed together and then sliced up like a salami that you would put like in a sandwich. I probably passed on that one, but the locals were buying it in slabs, so it must taste good.
I do. It's funny now that you said it, like, I do remember going to the market. So we had our, like, I think our first day in Cusco. We actually went to a school, and it was kind of part of our experience, was go to a school and visit as a tour group. Interesting just to see how they run it. And then after that we walked back to town, and I just remember, going past this to a market, and it's kind of like that daily life thing, getting to see, you know, you don't necessarily have to buy anything, you can, but just to walk around and see the different vegetables and how it operates. And it's always that daily life stuff is sometimes some of my favorite.
Mine too.
And I'm getting like a real flashback of like leather goods as well, and even having a snack there, and just even buying like the chip packet of chips or something, it's just like it's a different brand and they have a slightly different flavor, and you're just like, oh, this is we had one packet actually, they used to just those as snacks, and it was like a sort of tomatoey flavor, like, oh, this is the best. again, we love our snacks. But, after Cusco, did you head off anywhere, or was the end of the trip?
That was the end of the trip, and then we returned back to Lima and then flew down to Uruguay. So 12 days of amazingness in Peru, and I would have loved to do the extension, which is a common extension for that sort of trip, is to go to Lake Titicaca and onto Puno, which I know that you guys did in your Bolivia episode. You talked a little bit about that.
We did. I know we kept jumping back and forth a bit. So if you haven't listened, do tune into Bolivia to get a bit of that. But my friend had been traveling. So we had after everybody had left, we had one extra night in Cusco. And it was Halloween, actually. It was amazing. And we went and bought, we'll get involved. So we bought like pink wigs. They're funny. And people did. They thought it was like amazing, because we stand out with our white skin, and we just had this pink hair, and they were just like, it's so fun, or like rainbowy sort of pink, yellowy green, I don't know, but just it was fun. And just everyone was out in the centro, and kids, adults, everybody gets like, they really get into Halloween in like in the Latin countries. Like I don't know if it's just the Americanism, but it's also got some sort of connection there. And
The Day of the Dead.
Yeah, it was just amazing. Everyone was down and just hanging out, and then we went to a club after, as you do, and like some really good clubs in Cusco, some really good bars and clubs. Like, you can party if you want to. But then we had a day where we went to, I was trying to look it up before, it makes me think of like La Bamba, but there was a river, wasn't too far.
Yes, we went to the same place.
We did the whitewater rafting, which is really fun, and I got to show off Jess that I'm funny in Spanish as well as in English. So I was shouting out to the there was a very good looking Peruvian guide on the bank, and I shouted out, "Cuál es tu número?" which is, "What's your number?" And he said back, seis, which is the devil's number. And I was like, "Oh, he's funny too." But we were just being very silly, and yeah, it's just super fun. Just, it's really, you know, such a fun activity to do that you don't always do somewhere. And again, making the most of that. Peru has this incredible natural landscape. So to get to see it, have that river experience. And then, yeah, we got the bus, and I do believe now it was Puno. I will have to check my journals. though I think it remembered, and I forgot to tell Jess on the other episode, I lost my journal. It's one of my most heartbreaking, you know, like as a traveller, how that is. I'd had that journal from, and it went through India for 7 weeks with me earlier that year. You know, I'd had a really big year. I was 25 that year, just lots of stuff going on. And then this massive epic trip through Peru, Bolivia, Mexico and the US, and then flying back home, I left it on the plane when I had to get off in Buenos Aires. And it just, back at, so yeah, my top tip that I've remembered now, top travel tip, do not put things in the back of the seat, or do not put important things like your phone or your passport or your journal that you've been writing in for 8 months of the year. You will not get it back, and you will be devastated. And so, yeah, in a way, there's probably stuff in there that was good to go, but like, you know, maybe it's good, like it was like purging, but some of the stuff I would really like to have those facts now. So that is why my it is a little patchy in my memory, but I do believe it was Puno, and then we did the floating islands, the Uros Islands, which were, you know, there's just so many indigenous cultures in Peru. Mm.
Well, fun fact for Darius, there's over 47 indigenous languages spoken across the country.
There you go. And yeah, so see this completely different culture and these people, like, way of living, and these floating islands are still there, and they've got like grass huts that are on these, and
made from reeds, aren't they? Made from reeds, yeah.
It's like marshy type area, and so, and like I said, I think the weather wasn't great. It was like rainy around that time, a bit foggy almost, and so, and I said my memory is also a bit foggy around it, but yeah, it sort of added to that. It was like eerie almost.
Mm. I believe it's quite a humid sort of climate, so there is a lot of a foggy, misty sort of moments.
Yeah.
Sort of clear into the afternoons, into that really blue sky and sun, but lots of sort of morning and evening fog and mist.
And I was reading a book, which was a bit, I ended up stopping it, but it was set in Peru, and it's like that kind of got that magical feeling, and it brought back a lot of memories. I can't even remember that it has something to do with a clock and something. It was a very odd book, but it took back to, it was going, trying to find, what's that stuff that you, quinine.
Ah, yes.
And so it was all about
malaria. Just drink lots of gin and tonic.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed the being in Peru element, but the storyline was very hard. They had someone from the indigenous culture. And so I liked that bit, and it's why whoever bought the book for me gave it to me, but it was just very hard to follow. But yeah, I think I definitely need to get back, and I'm glad that I did get to see like Titicaca in both Peru and Bolivia. I would highly recommend that, and just having a bit more time. And from my the place that I really love to get back to, my friend whose husband is Peruvian, she went to the Rainbow Mountains.
Yes, I've seen pictures of those. That would be certainly on my hit list to go back to.
So they're like, it's like stone, and it's just this gradient, and it's like proper bright colours, and it's just a natural occurrence.
Yeah, it's all the minerals that are in all the rock, and when the rain comes, it then runs all the minerals down the side of the rock, which makes the rainbow pattern. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it just looks, you know, and it just sort of in the clothing, you know, it sort of like mirrors that bright, vibrant, colourful clothing. So one of my best, that's terrible English, one of my favourite souvenirs of all time is from Peru. I got that beautiful coloured print, and it's like a striped colours. I got shoes in that.
Yeah.
And then they died because I wore them to death. And then my mother-in-law, they went to Peru a few years ago, and she bought me a pair. Yeah, I was like, yay, you know me.
Yeah.
If it's rainbow, I'll take it. So any top tips or things people should know about Peru?
Top tips, yeah. Look, eat everything because the food is really good. I mean, especially the snack foods like the empanadas and the latte and the enchiladas and all the good stuff. Like, make sure you try things. Be a little bit brave if you're not in that space. Be wary of the altitude sickness, definitely. And you know, talk to your GP or whatever beforehand and get whatever you sort of can to be prepared for that. And also obviously your vaccinations as well. Be aware of what you need to have. I would say pack light, because you probably will shop a little bit. You know, the fabrics and the things, the alpaca wool is really, really highly valued there. There's lots of handicrafts, scarves, jumpers, beanies, all that type of thing. And also the ceramics, the pottery, there's a lot of that type of thing if you're into that type of gear. So pack a little bit light, but also pack light because you will be doing a lot of sort of transitioning from, you know, train or bus or plane, and you just don't want to be lugging a whole bunch of stuff and suitcases on cobbled streets. I think we maybe spoke a bit about that in our packing. They really don't go well. So, you know, think about that. Yeah. Think about that when you're going. And it is a big trip, so do think about tacking on a little bit extra because it's a long way to go for, you know, a 10-day trip through just to see Machu Picchu or whatever it might be. So have a little bit of a think about that. I would almost recommend adding in a stopover. If you do go via Santiago, maybe add in a couple of days there and break the journey a little bit, because it is a heck of a long way. Think about that. Get to some, I really think that those restaurants that you were talking about that are becoming that sort of fusion modern twist on traditional foods are quite incredible, and they're really, really worth a visit. And some of them you do need to have a reservation for. So do a little bit of research before you go. Silver is a big thing. They have some of the largest world reserves of silver in Peru. So if you're into silver jewellery and things, think about that. I have some amazing pieces, and that actually makes me think I need to get them out and wear them more often. But I have some beautiful pieces that I purchased. We went to a silver factory, and the guys like adjusted things and made things for me on the spot. And it was, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of on the outskirts. It's a bit ruggedy around the area, and it's really in a little, like in their workshop type thing.
That's right. Yeah.
The handicrafts at like, so if you get the opportunity, definitely going and seeing them at work.
Yep. And just find a space to just watch the local life go by, whether it's in a plaza or in front of a basilica or, yeah, a soccer match or anything where people are just doing what they do every day, and watch the world go by, because they're just such a beautiful people, and it's such a beautiful place. The architecture is stunning, so it's just a nice place to just enjoy.
Yeah, and especially in Cusco, it's just, yeah. I was just having flashbacks of sitting in one of those little plazas, this little sort of park. There's a couple of statues. I think the chocolate museum was behind us.
There's a fountain there in the main one.
Yeah, there's sort of stone, and then they've got like little shutters on the windows, sort of this like wooden shuttery type. It's very charming, quaint.
Yes. And if you're a photographer that enjoys doors and windows, because a lot of us get suckered into that, you will have no end of opportunities to take doors and windows photos, because there's amazing options. It's a beautiful country, but it's also such historic and cultural country, and I highly recommend anyone go and have a look. Yeah.
Even in the hotels, that they have little courtyards. Like, we had a gorgeous little courtyard, and just having breakfast in this little table courtyard, and the atrium sort of feeling with the sky open. It's very open. Really, again, making most of the nature and appreciating that. So, Thank you so much for taking that walk down memory lane with us. And obviously, as always, you have such thorough and wonderful knowledge of and such good tips, I think, to make the most of it. And agreed, it just embrace the food, embrace the culture. And, yeah, I remember getting money out and just wishing that I'd sort of put a little bit more. And it was the first stop for me on a 7-week trip. So couldn't take a lot. But, yeah, definitely the shopping. And there's some really cute like boutiques with those beautiful, you know, alpaca, the wool and the silver. So some really, like, yeah, there's the touristy stuff and there's the fun souvenirs that you're like, yeah, of course I'm going to get a poncho and stuff like that. But there's also some really elegant and, you know, kind of more authentic mementos of your time in Peru. So have a bit of cash, be willing to buy yourself something nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, I wouldn't say it's an expensive country to visit at all, but I think, you know, if you are going to buy something local, invest in something that is, you know,
a scarf or a jumper, you know, for like $100 or like, you know, so, you know, a nice piece of silver jewelry, like, it's going to feel expensive relative to the fact that it is a reasonably cheap country, but compared to what you pay for that at home and for like a handcrafted piece that's representative of the country, like it's very reasonable. It's just that it is more than your usual souvenir expenditure. So put that in the budget. Yes, dying to get back there now and to see more beautiful Peru. So muchas gracias. And I hope for everyone listening, this has either inspired you or taken you back to your trip as well. Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Hasta luego.
Adios.
Thanks for listening, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Already looking forward to the next one. We also have a rather extensive back catalogue for you to check out. But in the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram. That's at Lovely Travels on Instagram.
Or you can come and check us out on Facebook, Lovely Travels. That's LOVELLY. Or we would love for you to join our Facebook community with more than 500 members talking all things travel and adventure. That's the Lovely Travels community.
You can also visit our website, which is lovelytravels.com.
Or shoot us an email. We love hearing from our listeners. So please send us an email, feedback, comments, questions, whatever. info@lovelytravels.com.
And you can listen, review, subscribe, like, share, and promote our podcast in any shape, way, or form. We are on Spotify, iTunes, the internet, Google Podcasts. Everywhere where you get podcasts, you will find us.
All good podcasting locations. So tune in next time, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you then.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.